Hey, welcome to the Napcast. My name is David.
And my name is Seth. And today we have our guest Kellen back with us from Washington. Say hi, Kellen.
Hello.
And we have a random question for you this time. What would you say is your favorite band?
My favorite band.
There is no wrong answer.
Is a Christian Canadian like alternative rock group that sadly disbanded before I got to see them in concert.
But
I have
worst.
Many of their CDs and I enjoy them quite a bit.
Does what this group called? Have a name?
Down Here.
Ooh.
I don't know if I've actually heard of them.
I have. It's been a long time, but
All right. Now, do you have any random questions for us before we launch into the episode?
What is your favorite thing to do on a rainy afternoon?
Stand outside in the rain and take pictures because I love the rain.
Well, it depends. Do I have a fireplace? Because if so, I would curl up by the fireplace, drink hot chocolate, and overheat from the blanket. and then I would probably be reading a book or three or something like that.
At the same time?
Probably one at a time, but fair I would enough. Make it through as many as possible. But it is also fun to go for a run in the rain. I don't do it very often, but it's actually a lot of fun. It sure beats running in like 90 degree weather when it's super hot.
Absolutely.
It also beats running in the snow.
So. Also true.
All right. Now, to launch into this episode, we're going to be talking about random literary genres that we enjoy. So, Kellen, you're an English major. What's your absolute favorite literary genre?
That's a terrible question to ask.
Well, what's one that you happen to enjoy a lot? So much so that you might even consider it to be your favorite.
I might have to go with British mysteries as a genre, just because I don't think classic literature counts as a genre.
It's a little bit broad to be a genre.
Yeah,
that's true. So British mysteries, does that include like Sherlock Holmes?
Yes, it does.
Ooh. All right.
And Agatha Christie.
Oh, I'm interested already.
Oh, man, I need to read more of these. Man. The only one that I've actually read that kind of counts was an Edgar Allan Poe short story called The Murders of Rue Morgue, where there was the whole story was about a detective who was very deductive rather than inductive. That's not the right term. But he could puzzle things out in a Sherlock manner rather than just looking at the facts like all the police were doing. Hmm. And so he figured out that the whole murder, spoiler alert, was committed by an orangutan that escaped from the zoo.
What?
Rather than an actual murder, just because none of the facts added up. And it was a really cool story. Hmm. Very dark, of course, because someone got murdered.
Well, it's Poe, so it's going to be
But that kind of counts as British mysteries, kind of. Poe was British, right?
Yep. I think he was American, but some people actually do consider Poe to be one of the original traditional mystery writers.
Oh,
interesting.
I wasn't too far off. Yeah. I know what I'm talking about.
Clearly. Oh, man. Sherlock Holmes, that just takes me back. I love mysteries. I still do. I don't read nearly enough of them, but I had from the library, I had for the longest time the complete works of
William Shakespeare.
Arthur Conan Doyle.
Oh, sorry.
As far as his Sherlock Holmes stories. So I've read almost all of the Sherlock Holmes stories when I was a kid.
It just sounds awesome. Are they, by the way, in the same format as like those old Encyclopedia Brown books?
For the most part, they're not. So
not really.
The Sherlock Holmes narratives are framed as Dr. Watson narrating the case that he and Holmes were investigating on that particular day. It's really interesting. The more you start to dig into that, and people have tried to come up with a timeline of Sherlock Holmes mysteries.
Okay.
There are very, very few dates that he gives in the actual stories to go on. So it gets very challenging. I think the only dates we have for sure are his first case and his last case, which are about 30 years apart, something
That's
like that.
That's a pretty long, successful career,
oh, for
I'm assuming.
Sure.
And Kellen has read every single one of these.
I have, actually.
She has. Which one was your favorite?
My favorite was actually Valley of Fear.
Ooh,
really?
And I didn't appreciate it as much until I was rereading it, but it's because of the major plot twist at the end actually changed my mind about the entire story.
Did you catch it the first time, or was it reading back through that you started to notice how everything worked with the plot twist?
It was definitely the second time. The first time, I was just very confused, but when I was going back through, I realized what Doyle was doing, and it made the whole story much more interesting.
Those are some of the best kinds of stories. That just reminds me of, like, The Prestige. Or movies that are of that genre that do that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you can kind of tell that they're setting up something. Sometimes the twist makes no sense at all. It just doesn't work. They're just trying to surprise you.
Whatever.
Yeah, but some of those are very well set up.
Some of them are. Like, talking about Sherlock Holmes cases, the one that immediately came to my mind, because I loved it so much as a kid, was The Adventure of the Norwood Builder.
Mm.
Because it's the first one that looks like an open and shut case, and then it's not. And the way they do that reveal is just spectacular.
Yeah, that reminds me of the Edgar Allan Poe mystery where it looked like it was open and shut, but the more you look at the facts, the more nothing adds up. And surprise, surprise, it's an escaped orangutan who shoves a guy upside down into a chimney or something like that. And it's just one of those things where if you find all the facts, you can see that. If you get a certain set of them, you think it's one way, but then as you get uncover more and more facts, you start to realize, wait, this doesn't add up. Wait, this doesn't add up. Wait, that doesn't work either. You know, and it was very cool to watch him piece all of that together. And the story is only like, you know, 10, 15 pages.
Even so, Edgar Allan Poe. That's impressive. Agatha Christie does a lot of that too in her works, I've noticed. I didn't get into Agatha Christie until I was my last year at school, actually. Oh. So I had to read The Mousetrap for a class project, and it the only version I could find in the library came in a big collection of Agatha Christie, so I read all of them.
As you do.
Yeah, as you do. It's just a little light reading.
Just a little. You
they
know.
Go pretty fast.
Just a couple days here and there.
But it's the thing I remember most about The Mousetrap is that you don't know who it is right up until the very end of the story.
Is it set up properly, at least?
It is. So the suspicion is pointed at every single one of the six main characters, and only at the end do you find out, oh, this happened beforehand, and it's now causing this reaction.
Which clearly means it's this character.
Exactly.
And then on the last page, like, oh, psych, this guy. Okay. I don't know. I haven't actually read that, but I need to. Speaking of other literary genres, what would you say one of your favorites is, Seth?
Literary genres. I have always been a big fan of sci-fi.
Sci-fi?
It's very hard to find good sci-fi.
Well, I'd like to recommend a lot of Star Wars books that I know you've already read.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
See, Star Wars, though, is more science fantasy rather than hard sci-fi.
That's true. Have you ever read, I'd say, Ender's Game?
I have. It's been a long time ago, but I have read Ender's Game.
Okay, that one was much more of a... It was definitely sci-fi, but it's a very futuristic, like, almost fantasy sci-fi, mm-hmm. in which there are some elements that are not just science. Like, there are some aliens here and there.
Yeah.
But the majority of it is a very advanced science that's also an action thriller, and it gets very political in some of the other books, which is actually not too bad. But it was a good read. The twist at the end of the first one, well, not twist, I'd say, but the major climax at the end of the first book was shocking.
That is definitely a big reveal.
It was a great story, though. I really enjoyed it.
Mm.
All right. What are other literary genres that you would find that you both enjoy?
I do like fantasy, but I'm very picky about my fantasy.
That's fair. There is a lot of bad fantasy out there, to be sure.
There really is. What are some great examples of fantasy books you've read that you just highly recommend to everybody you meet? Or if you're not that enthusiastic, just recommend when people ask you.
Well, I have to say the obvious ones, which are Lord of the Rings and Chronicles of Narnia.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You are welcome back on the show anytime.
But more recently, I read the Prydain Chronicles by Lloyd Alexander. And actually really enjoyed those as well.
I have not met very many people that actually know of that series.
Yes.
And it's so good.
I have not heard of these
before.
Oh, you
need to. There's only five books. Well, there's an extra book that's like a bunch of short stories that goes with it. The books are like 200-300 pages. They're not very large.
Okay.
Pretty easy to read. Like, I mean, you could read the entire thing in an afternoon. But they're
Fair
a good
enough.
Series. The characters are a bit British. Like, there's Taran, I think, and then Princess Eilonwy, who... is frankly a very, very verbal, almost Luna Lovegood type character who's like a little bit out there, but also talks all the time.
Interesting.
And it's really funny to watch or to read. That was such a good series, though. Which one was your favorite book, would you say?
That's a hard question.
Agreed. This is why I ask these things.
I would probably have to reread the books to really be able to answer that. But I did enjoy the last one. Mostly because of the ending, because it surprised me.
The High King.
Yes.
That ending was, it was a bit of a twist, I'd say. Mm-hmm. You could kind of see it coming, but at the same time, you didn't even realize that that was like a choice that he had. It was really cool. And I'm not going to spoil anything for you, Seth.
Yeah, please don't.
Since you haven't read the books, but at the very end, Taran, well, the book is called The High King. And so Taran, I think he's trying to find the High King, or they're trying to figure out the prophecy of who is going to be the High King. And then they think it's Taran, but then he makes decisions that they think it's not Taran. And so towards the end, you start to realize who it actually is. And then at the very end, you realize for sure who it is without spoiling anything. But
so going back to prophecies and that thing, that reminded me of a book series by Suzanne Collins that not a lot of people know about. It's called Gregor the Overlander.
I've actually... heard of that, but I don't remember what it's about. It's been too long.
So it's basically the first book in the series is about this boy named Gregor who's babysitting his little sister, And long story short, she ends up getting lost in the underlevels of New York City. And it turns out there's civilization under New York City.
I remember that now. And she learns how to speak all the different dialects, right? Or is that the other sister? He's got two, I think. A very young one and like a moderately young one or something like that.
It's been a little while.
But it has been. But oh, that was a good series.
It was. The last book I was really interested by, because there was a twist in the last book where it was revealed that this prophecy that Gregor was this mystical hero that was supposed to come down and save everyone was a complete lie.
Oh.
And so he's been following this prophecy for 5 books, and then all of a sudden it doesn't exist. And so it leaves the universe with some interesting ramifications based on that.
Didn't he learn like echolocation in part of the books? Didn't he figure out where he could like go... And he could just see everything with sound because he was blind.
Might have. Like I said, it's been a while since I've read them. So
I need to go back and reread that. But I remember that series. That was so long ago. Oh, yeah. It was so good.
That came out before The Hunger Games.
Oh, really?
Which is what made Suzanne Collins famous.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I did read The Hunger Games. And I have to say, they were pretty decent books. But I don't understand all of the hype behind them. I guess teen angst maybe would be part of it. People really identify with
that
kind of
character. From a literary perspective, it has a very interesting narrative format. It's presented in first person present, where the narrator is narrating events as they happen to her. In this case, the narrator is Katniss.
Right.
I've talked to some people that said they were a little bit put off by that approach simply because they had no frame of reference when they were reading it.
Okay. That kind of makes sense. I don't remember being thrown off by that, but it didn't, I guess, rock me as much as other books have with the different ways that they read things or wrote things. Have you ever read the Inkspell or Inkheart trilogy or whatever that is?
I have not.
Like Inkheart, Inkspell, Inkdeath or something like that. That whole format, the book is written slightly differently. And that's actually a plot point is how the book itself is written differently because it refers kind of to itself in like the third person within the book, something like that. I kind of enjoyed it. Like it was a good story, but I didn't really like how it was written. But
it was
still pretty good.
That reminds me actually of, I believe it's Phantom of the Opera that's written completely as a series of like newspaper articles and letters.
Interesting. I don't think I've ever read that. That sounds like a great format.
It was very hard to get into at the time because I was reading this as a middle schooler.
Oh. Speaking of classic books that we were forced to read back in high school or some of us weren't, were there any books that you went back and revisited and were like, wait, this is actually a really good book? I'm going to start with an example. Great Gatsby and Fahrenheit 451.
Ooh.
Both of those are actually really good books. I just didn't ever get into them until way later.
Yeah, I have a little bit of a divisive answer on this one, I think.
Oh.
Mine is The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn.
Oh, that's actually not a bad book.
I did not appreciate it hardly at all as a middle schooler when I read it for the first time.
Makes sense.
And then going back to it years later, I realized, okay, this book is actually really good.
I have a circumstance somewhat like that. I read A Tale of Two Cities for the first time in high school for a class, and I thought it was going to be terrible. But once I got through the first several chapters, I started getting into it, and then I couldn't put it down, and now it's my favorite book.
Tale of Two Cities. Who wrote that book?
Charles Dickens.
Yes.
I was going to say that, but I wasn't sure, and I didn't want
to
sound...
A similar thing actually happened to me with Great Expectations. Mm-hmm. It was very slow to take off, but once you got
it
into it, it's very, very good.
That hasn't happened to me yet with the book Grapes of Wrath. I read that book back in middle school or something, which is not a good time to read that book.
I didn't realize
until like the second to last chapter that TAR'D was Southern slang for tired. I had no idea. And so I thought it was like, are they tardy? Are they late? What is going on here? And I didn't figure it out to the very end that they were, I'm just tired. And they were apparently tired a lot in that book, but I didn't understand
it. I seem to remember
that
from The Grapes of Wrath.
I never really understood the book. I still don't, so I'm going to have to go back and reread it just to see if it's as bad as I remember, which I'm sure it isn't. But I'm sure it's a classic book for a reason, but I don't know. It's been too long since I've read it, and it was in middle school, so.
Fair enough.
All right, well, we're running low on time for this episode.
All right.
So Kellen, once again, is our special guest. Thank you for joining us on this show.
Thank you.
And it is your honor and your duty to choose a random note, and we shall harmonize and sing goodbye.
E.
We're going to go with an E. Let's go with E3. What should I sing? Should I sing the fourth?
Can you sing the sixth?
Should I sing the sixth below or above?
Below.
Okay.
Just for the fun of it.
Well, we're back in C major, so all right. So you sing an E, and I'm going to sing a C, and we're going to end the episode.
All right.
So ready? Goodbye.